Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit aflac.com to learn more.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday.
Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed. This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
You usually don't hear the words 74% throttle in reverse. You don't hear those words. Unless someone is trying to launch their SUV into another dimension or escape a crashing train at a railroad track. There's really not a lot of reasons why you're going in reverse at that speed. It's not safe. It's incredibly dangerous. And you can easily lose control. And again, there's not a lot of reasons for it. There are certainly some out there. Some that are very logical. Some that are a little maniacal. It's exactly where today's testimony in the Karen Reed trial begins, with an expert witness walking us through a digital breadcrumb trail left by Reed's Lexus. The kind of forensic story your car tells when it doesn't know it's on trial. The kind of story your car tells without any sort of opinion, without any sort of reason to say this or say that. It just says what it is because it is what it is. It's just flat out data. It's not an opinion, it is data. And when you are a logical, rational human being that can put numbers together and timestamps together and physical locations together, it draws a bit of a picture. And Dr. Judson Welcher drew that picture clearer than ever before in the trial of Karen Reed tonight. Some may say to the point of beyond a reasonable doubt, Karen Reed hit John O'Keefe. Because if you look at the data and the level to which it was gathered and the tests that were done, there ain't a lot of denying it anymore. Well, we'll see what Karen Reed said outside of court in just a few moments. We'll watch the video. It's telling. But first, let's get into the story and tell me in the comment sections what your thoughts are on where things stand now. Is this reasonable doubt or beyond a reasonable doubt at this point? Because here's the way I'm looking at it. The data clearly shows she hit John O'Keefe. There's no way around that anymore. She hit John O'Keefe. If you don't think she hit John O'Keefe, you are living on another planet. This is just pure data now. You're not paying attention. You're not reasonably connecting the dots anymore if you think she did not hit John O'Keefe. If you think it's more logical that all of that science, all of that data matching up the way it does perfectly to her striking John O'Keefe at that very specific time, the vehicle telling us that, his phone telling us that, everything telling us that, Karen's even told us that. But if you still are buying this idea that his friends decided to beat him up in a house, a location which he could not physically possibly be, if we're looking at the timestamps, then I'm sorry. I'm sorry for you. I really am, because I think you got some other things going on if you're still stuck in that corner. Tell me in the comments what your thoughts are. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case and on YouTube and X as well. I want to hear your thoughts. This to me was like, whoa. Dr. Judson Welcher, the prosecution's crash reconstructionist and biochemical expert, took the stand today to explain what the car knows, and what it knows according to the data is that something unusual happened in front of 34 Fairview Road at about 12:32 a.m. on the night Officer John O'Keefe died. Welcher analyzed the event data recorder, the automotive equipment of a black box, basically, from Reed's SUV. That data captured a moment where the car accelerated in reverse at 74% throttle or possibly greater, he said. She could have completely floored it. And if you're at 74, you're pretty much almost there. Think about that for a second. John O'Keefe gets out of the car. He's going to go into the party. And suddenly this car launches. It was like 80-some feet in reverse. 24 miles an hour, 74% accelerator on. That's not a, I'm just backing up to say something. That's a, he's behind my car and I'm going to floor it something. That's what takes us to murder too. Because one could still argue she was drunk as hell, because she was. She was angry. And maybe she was thinking that he was on the sidewalk, he was in the lawn, just too dumb at that moment in time to register that John O'Keefe might very likely still be behind the vehicle that he just got out of as he walks towards the vehicle or towards the house. And I don't care what your excuses, I don't care if you're drunk, I don't care if you're a narcissist, I don't care what the hell has happened to you in your life, that this is how you react to things in a pattern. You did it. Karen, you did it. There's no question about that. It seems you're even questioning that a little bit as well with your comments as you left court today. Because the data is what it is. And even you seem to acknowledge that. Again, we'll play that clip in just a few moments for you. But just think about this. 74% throttle. Most people don't even put that kind of gas into reverse when they're escaping a bear, let alone backing down a roadway as it's snowing in the dark and your passenger just got out behind your vehicle. That throttle pushed the vehicle backwards to just under 24 miles per hour. It's not a gentle roll. That's a deliberate fast reverse covering over 50 feet. And here's the kicker. That moment in the SUV's data lines up perfectly with the last known interaction with John O'Keefe's cell phone. That came from a prior expert, forensic analyst Shannon Burgess, who testified about a 21 to 29 second time discrepancy between the SUV's onboard clock and the phone's actual timestamp. But I guess they're in on the conspiracy, too, if we're still, oh, that's a bit, don't know why. Yeah. Once Welcher adjusted for that gap, he found that the last digital heartbeat from Reed's car lined up tightly with the final lock event on John O'Keefe's phone. In plain English, the last time anyone interacted with O'Keefe's phone is right around the same second mark, Reed's car slammed into reverse in front of the house and struck something. But that's just digital breadcrumbs. To figure out what that reverse maneuver might have done, Welcher didn't just run numbers. He got hands-on, literally. And if you've not seen his testimony today, you have to go back and watch. There's so many visual cues in this that really just blow your mind. And they line up perfectly. You want to see how John got the scratches on the arm? You want to see how his body lined up next to that Lexus SUV? It's explained. He's got to look at it. And it's pretty damning. Even dressed in clothing, similar to what O'Keefe was wearing that night, held a glass like the one O'Keefe had and stood in front of a similar Lexus. Then applied some blue paint to the SUV's taillight and had it make contact with his arm. What showed up? That streak, the paint in the same place O'Keefe had a deep laceration. You know, the dog bites from the dog that doesn't have saliva or a bottom jaw. Wait, it does. But in reality, it doesn't stop there. Welcher documented marks to the hip and head, injuries O'Keefe sustained, and showed how the physical layout of the SUV matched those impact zones. So you want to know how John O'Keefe got that injury? Didn't quite match a vehicle impact? No, it wasn't a vehicle impact standing directly behind the vehicle. It was on the side. It was enough to push him to the side and sustain the injuries that he'd got. And it lines up perfectly. He didn't say this is exactly how he died. He didn't have to, because what he showed was that on a platter. He showed the actual biomechanics of a backward moving Lexus, the exact type Karen Reed had. He even went and bought a Lexus, the exact make and model that she had. And then he matched the types of locations of O'Keefe's injuries far more convincingly than, say, the defense's theory that he got mauled by a dog or hit in the head inside of a house with his friends. And then suddenly everybody is out to get Karen Reed, which would involve a cast of more than 50-some people all putting their lives, careers, and everything on the line to frame Karen Reed. If you're still thinking that, you got to ask yourself, what other things in this world are you seeing a little bit off? A wild dog biting a cop in the blizzard. On the front lawn or another cop's house without anyone noticing. And they're dragging him out there. Jen's in her bedroom checking scores and seeing how long it takes for someone to die in the cold. You know, like people, normal people do. That have zero track record of any sort of, you know, criminal culpability or anything of that nature. That's just, you know, normal mom stuff. You think it's a scary world to believe that Karen Reed could be this type of person that hit her boyfriend, realized it, and then fled because she didn't want to be accountable? Do you think that world is scarier than a world where you literally have 50-some people all conspiring against someone? and they're living just a normal, happy, healthy family life. All these different people, many that don't know each other, all conspiring. The lab's in on it. The accident reconstructionists are in on it. That guy's in on it. This guy's in it. Everybody's in on it. That's a scary world to think that people could actually, number one, even coordinate themselves that well in a conspiracy. More or less that many people all having this same evil streak in them to do such a thing. Which seems like a lot more evil is to have one person know what really did happen and watch all of these people be harassed, have their lives turned upside down because you can't take responsibility. That's evil. And the fact that you left your boyfriend there in the snow too. I mean, that's pretty sick. Allegedly to all of it. The SUV starts to sound a little more plausible when you look at everything in, you know, perspective. But I know a lot of the FKR folks, perspective is a bad word. Then came the questions of that broken taillight, a centerpiece of the defense's theory. They've claimed the taillight didn't break when O'Keefe was allegedly hit. Instead, they say it shattered hours later when Karen Reed accidentally backed into O'Keefe's parked vehicle as she was leaving his house. They even have the video, 5:07 a.m. surveillance clip showing her vehicle ever so lightly at less than a mile an hour tapping his in the driveway. Welcher took a look at that video. He took the scene, put it under a microscope using 3D laser scanning and high-resolution measurements. Measurements that you could literally take the gas cap on that vehicle and ask for the measurement between that and the cigarette lighter. And you could be down to millimeters based on how accurate this 3D laser scanning high resolution measurement process is. So he did that. He reconstructed all the angles, the speed, the contact points. His conclusion, and you can watch him go on about it for about an hour explaining all of the calculations and all of the measurements. The garage bump was nothing. It was nothing. Over in John O'Keefe's driveway, it was nothing. The kind of contact that might knock some snow maybe off a bumper, maybe, but would not crack the plastic on your kid's tricycle, let alone a taillight. And more importantly, the two didn't collide at the taillight. The video didn't show any red plastic fragments in the snow, and nobody found any at the scene. To Welcher, it was clear to a high degree of engineering certainty that the taillight was intact when that garage bump happened. Outside garage bump. Which puts the breakage right back at the scene of the alleged impact in front of Fairview Road. Now, all of this data tells a story, but it needs a timeline to hold it together. So Welcher did what good forensic experts do. He clocked the drive. Specifically, how long it would have taken for Reed to go from 34 Fairview Road back to O'Keefe's home after the incident. Depending on the route, the time landed somewhere between 4 and 5 minutes. That travel estimate was used to support the prosecution's claim that Reed made that short drive shortly after the SUV's reverse event. Then here's where the tech comes back into play. Reed's phone reconnected to O'Keefe's home Wi-Fi network just minutes after the alleged impact. The prosecution didn't say this was a smoking gun, but they were certainly waving it around like it still had the smell of gunpowder. One of the things that stood out during Welcher's testimony is how deliberate everything was. This wasn't a I think or I feel kind of expert. He used terms like high degree of engineering certainty, and then he backed it up by showing us exactly why there's that high degree of engineering certainty. Expert speak for I've done my homework, and this isn't a guess, and it's not my first rodeo. Every conclusion he presented was based on data, velocity, throttle, position, trajectory, injury mapping, and good old-fashioned physics, and a lot of graphics, and a lot of graph charts. The Lexus didn't just do something odd in reverse. It allegedly did exactly what you'd expect it to do if it were involved in hitting a person standing near the taillight. There was no bombast in his testimony, no dramatic finger pointing, just one methodical step after another, layering vehicle data over human anatomy, timestamp over timestamp, point of contact over point of injury. What emerged wasn't a theory, it was a tightly constructive narrative made out of numbers, speed, bruising patterns, and paint transfer. So while no one stood up and shouted, "She did it!" the evidence sure did. What Welcher offered today was something arguably more persuasive, a forensic timeline so precisely constructed, it would be difficult to walk through it and not feel like someone had been hit by that car. And as that timeline gets tighter, the room for alternate explanations pretty much disappears, which is exactly where things get heated, not just in the evidence, but in the legal strategy on both sides. That part, that's what we're going to get to next. Before the jury ever took their seats this morning, there were already moments of tenseness in that courtroom. The day opened, not with testimony, but actually with a legal chess match, one of those procedural showdowns where every word, every document, and every slide in a PowerPoint deck suddenly becomes a battlefield. At the center of it, Dr. Judson Welcher, again, same expert, same core testimony, but now under the scrutiny, not for what he said, but for what he challenged. The defense was on its feet before 9 a.m., raising concerns about some recent edits to Welcher's presentation. Apparently, in the days leading up to his testimony, his report, originally 141 slides long, had been trimmed down and tweaked. One slide was pulled entirely, others had minor adjustments. According to the expert, he deleted like two words and a slide. Well, that might sound like housekeeping in a trial like this. It's practically waving a red flag, if you think that's a red flag. Robert Alessi, defense counsel, argued that these revisions weren't trivial. He said the changes, especially if they affected the timeline, could shift the entire narrative of what happened that night outside 34 Fairview Road. It's not a small deal. If the timeline moves, so does the whole theory of the crime. At least on their part. Maybe they should have thought of that before they made it up after the spooky man came to them and said, "Look at the people in the house." Dr. Welcher, for his part, held firm. He acknowledged the edits, sure, but he said they didn't change his conclusions. In fact, the new information pulled from fellow analyst Shannon Burch's findings, described as better data. He told the court he made the update to improve the accuracy of the timeline, not to alter its direction. And he insisted that his opinion was in no way influenced by the prosecution. "It's what the data shows," he said simply. That line might have landed flat in a lesser case or with the FKRs. But in this one, when every single expert is treated like an exhibit themselves, it resonated. Judge Beverly Cannone considered both sides, gave no dramatic speech, and ruled that Welcher's testimony could proceed. The jury was brought in just after 10:20 a.m., and the trial resumed with direct. Now, fast forward to the end of the day, after several hours of expert talk and vehicular physics, we're back in legal trench warfare. This time it's about boundaries, specifically what an expert like Welcher can and cannot say in front of a jury. Alessi stood again, objecting to the question that hadn't even been asked yet. He wanted to stop the prosecution from asking Welcher a very specific question. Did a collision occur? In Alessi's view, that wasn't a scientific conclusion. It was the core issue in the trial. It's what the jury is here to decide. Letting an expert say it outright, he argued, would be handing them the verdict. He didn't say it theatrically. Oh, wait, he kind of did. But the point was clear. Even if an expert is credible, even if their analysis is detailed, some lines shouldn't be crossed. Or at least that's the BS that he was trying to peddle and hoping someone would bite. Alessi stood again, objecting to a question that hadn't even been asked yet. He wanted to stop the prosecution from asking Welcher a very specific question. Did that collision occur? And in Alessi's view, it wasn't a scientific conclusion. It was the core issue of the trial. It's what the jury is here to decide. Letting an expert say it outright, he argued, would be handing them the verdict. Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan didn't sit quietly on that one. He fired back that the defense had spent their better part of the trial claiming there was no crash, no collision, no contact, no reverse even. And if the defense gets to say that, the prosecution should be allowed to rebut it with their own expert's conclusion. Sorry you don't like it. But no, it's just reality. You don't get to pick your own facts. Brennan hinted that Welcher wouldn't just say yes or no. He planned to ask about the type of collision, a clip or sideswipe, for example, the shape of the impact, the dynamics of the event. So not just a yes or a no. No, he's going to explain it in great detail for the jury. So there's no like, well, I wonder how strong he feels about that. Oh, kids, here's the book I just wrote on how this actually happened. Karen doesn't like that. Whether it matches the injuries, but still Alessi wasn't having it. Judge Cannone didn't make a snap call. She took the matter under advisement and said she'd decide in the morning before the jury returned. Meanwhile, in the background, the defense quietly moved a few pieces of their own. They submitted a revised witness list, something you'd miss if you weren't watching it closely. On it, four new names, all reportedly friends or contacts of Michael Proctor, the former Massachusetts State Police trooper who led the original investigation into John O'Keefe's death. The names themselves, Matthew Coleman, Michael Orico, Nicholas David White, Jonathan Diamonds, weren't familiar to the courtroom, but their role was spelled out clearly. They're being called to authenticate Proctor's personal text messages. These were the high school buddies or something that saw the inappropriate messages that Proctor sent. Here's the thing about this, though. Karen hit him. That's not debatable anymore. So anything over here in the side of shitty investigation, rude, shitty, callous, misogynistic Proctor doesn't take away from the vehicle and the phone and everything showing that she hit him. It's shitty. It's bad. But you do this. This does not equal get out of jail free card just because they're really shitty. Or maybe that was blown up more than it needed to be. But even if they are super shitty, the shittiest people in the world. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, just what if your car, his phone, the facts, the data show you did it, Karen? Doesn't matter what happens over here. I don't care if they're summoning flocks of attack seagulls. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he said. It doesn't matter what he did. It certainly should matter for his employment, and it has. But it doesn't matter here. Because this is facts. This can't be changed. And any facts you sprinkle over here, whether they even planted taillight, which I don't believe they did, but let's say they did because they really hated you and wanted you to go down because they saw what kind of a monster you can be in those interviews. Maybe they knew a little bit more about you than others did. And maybe they had a really bitter taste in their mouth and said, yeah, I hope she goes down because John didn't deserve that. Did not deserve that type of person. And that's not right. I'm not saying that's right. But even if they felt that way, it doesn't matter because the facts showed you hit him. This has nothing to do with this anymore. It just doesn't. You don't get a get out of jail free card because it was a shitty investigation and the people acted strange because the data shows you hit him. all of that matters because Proctor's texts are the ticking time bomb of credibility issues. But are they now? Yeah, Proctor has no credibility. But you know who Proctor isn't? He's not Alexis. He's not John's cell phone. He's a shitty cop who said horribly misogynistic things. But his words don't somehow magically reverse time and pull Karen away from reversing and slamming into John O'Keefe and killing him. He can say all the shitty things in the world about you, Karen. And it doesn't change a thing. In one of those text messages, he wrote that he hopes Karen kills herself. In others, he refers to in language so inflammatory that, you know, we're not going to repeat it on the air. They're not texts you'd expect from a neutral investigator. They're not even texts you'd expect from someone trying to cover their tracks. But they also have nothing to do with Karen Reed striking John O'Keefe. And that's been proven today. Well, Proctor has already testified. He acknowledged some of these messages were regrettable. Yeah, the defense appears determined to make sure the jury sees them, not as off-the-cuff rants, but as evidence of bias, potentially institutional bias. All the institutional bias you want doesn't change the fact that Karen hit John O'Keefe. It doesn't. It doesn't matter anymore. And hopefully in the jury's mind, it doesn't either. Because again, no matter how shitty you are over here, doesn't matter. The facts show you hit John O'Keefe and you lied about it.
Allegedly.
They're not just trying to poke holes in the timeline anymore. They're going to go after the entire foundation of the case. If they can just suggest that the investigation itself was tainted by personal grudges, by animosity, by bad faith, by witches conjuring up curses. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. They need to shift the narrative from what did Karen Reed do to what was done to Karen Reed. You know, basically the roadmap for all narcissists. What was done to me? Strategy shift was not announced with fireworks, but it's there, quietly humming underneath the rest of the proceedings, and it's starting to take shape exactly the same time that the prosecution appears to be winding down. Brennan has suggested, though not confirmed, that Welcher will be the last witness for the state. If that holds true, the prosecution may rest as early as this week, which means the defense's turn is coming, and with it, a very different story. And does that story matter anymore? Certainly not as much as it did the last time. Because that testimony today, that data today, it's irrefutable. First, the judge still needs to decide just how far an expert can go in telling their story. And we'll see what is allowed to be said. As today's expert witness winds down their testimony tomorrow and eventually steps into cross. What do you think? I think today was the game changer for a reasonable human being. I don't know how, honestly, anyone still can think she didn't strike John. And in Karen's own words today, she had this to say outside of court in her never ending moments of genius. Let's take a look.
So did you go in reverse 24 miles an hour, 53 feet?
The data is what the data is, and it's going to come out cleanly, more cleanly in our case in chief.
Leslie and AJ are standing there. It's like the most forced smiles. It's like they're at a Hardee's in 1987. And so they're bringing out like the cake and it's like just really disappointing and it's sad and the ball tank's closed down because somebody peed in it. But you're trying to like be an enthusiastic parent. Like, look, isn't this cake wonderful? you need a cattle prod or something. And they're like, shut up! Shut up! Because you can tell there's pain and artificial happiness as they're watching her. Look, I mean, just look at their faces. They're just like, do we have to push her down the steps quick to make her stop talking?
I think it's important to demonstrate, what is the Commonwealth accusing me of? The speed, the positioning? We create that for us. Back up into the crash test dummy at 24.2 miles an hour in the arm and see what happens. That's what I would want to see if I were you.
Oh, really? Maybe they can go do that for you, because you know what? Today, they pretty much showed what happened. And when you go in slow motion, you see exactly where that vehicle struck John O'Keefe. So what you just asked for today basically is what happened. And they wouldn't strike crash test dummy at 24 miles. Now, I mean, that would be a bit different thing, but if you want that set up, I'm sure they could. You can see it in much greater detail just of how that would happen in slow motion. And you know what? He had all of the science, all of the programs, all of that. This showed down to every minute calculation. Who was moving where, what part was going this way and that way, at what speed, at what trajectory, and where they would all land. So, Karen, they did that today. While you were on your computer, probably stocking up on snack sticks and ramen for your little stay that's coming up. Oh, there's more.
Do you recall that at all, Karen, though?
No.
This is why you cannot argue with narcissists. Because they can just go like, well, the data is the data, and it will show what it shows. Do you remember going in reverse? No, I don't, because it didn't happen. Karen, it did happen. And if you don't remember it happening, then you don't remember anything about what happened that night. And you don't remember him going in the house, because he didn't go in the house. And you probably don't even remember hitting him. But you did. At this point, it's like arguing with a three-year-old. Did you take the candy off the counter? No! Why are your hands all full of chocolate? I don't know. You took the candy off the counter. It didn't happen! Okay, Karen.
Any update on if you're calling Proctor, given that his friends are now witnesses on your list?
No comments. No, it's one of these four new witnesses. Say anything about them?
No comments.
Are you going to take the stand?
No comments.
No comments.
Oh, she said that with joy. I thought it was interesting. It was no comment on if Proctor's good. They're going to call Proctor. And there's no comment on if she'll take the stand. And if you noticed, in that very moment right there, Karen, with all of her narcissistic glee, of, oh, there could be soul attention on me on the stand. No comment. Little hair wave there. As it was just revealed in court today, without a doubt, your vehicle struck John O'Keefe. No comment. Why would anyone still support this woman? Because if she knows what she did, and then she stood by and watched all these people go through this hell, and she knew all along, and you're accusing all these other people of murder, which, by the way, is a crime in itself, which I hope to God you're charged for. Kind of a big deal, Karen. See if there's anything else here.
Somebody asked me if I'm going to take this one.
Can I say thank you, Chef?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Touché.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chef.
There you go. Cooking stuff up.
Wouldn't be surprised if Karen calls in sick tomorrow. I would not be surprised if it was another straight tequila night. Bad country song there. Ugh. I don't know what to say. My mind was blown today with the testimony, And the behavior after, I shouldn't be shocked, but it's just so disheartening that there can be humans like that out there. You hope to see better in people. That was not a good person. And of course, allegedly to everything we've talked about tonight. Even though the data shows you hit John O'Keefe. And the experts said it too. And then he got shut down really quick by Alessi. And we'll see if the judge comes back and says, yeah, you can say that without a doubt. Because he said it. He said it. In fact, you want to see it? You want to see it happen? This won't be long. This is what was said today in court. And pull it up here on the screen so you can see it.
Based on your analysis, data available, reviews, study, based on the fact that you are an accident reconstructionist and a biomedical engineer, have you reached an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty whether the defendant's Lexus struck Mr. John O'Keefe on January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.?
Yes.
And could you share the basis of your opinion before I ask you your ultimate opinion?
Sure. So again, you've seen my slide presentation. I've inspected the Lexus. I've looked at where it was and wasn't damaged. I've inspected the taillight. I got an exemplar Lexus. I ran lower speed contacts to verify that the injury pattern and location on the arm is consistent with the height and orientation of the taillight. I have looked at fracture tolerance data for falling backwards onto hard surfaces. I've looked at the metrics of where his injuries were and what injuries he didn't sustain. I've looked at the cell phone data, and then I've looked at Ms. Reed's interviews as well.
Based on all the evidence you consider, could you share with the jury what your opinion is to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty about whether the defendant's Lexus struck Mr. O'Keefe on January 29, 2022, around 12:32 a.m.?
Sure, you are. Going
to 11. I can answer. Yes, based on the totality of the evidence, DNA, everything I've talked about, that is consistent with that happening. With a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, that is what happened.
Strike that. I want to see counsel's advice.
And that's where the day pretty much ended with the jury in the courtroom. Follow the science. There it is. I rest my case. No, but I think Brennan might be resting his case pretty soon. What's your thoughts? How did it go? Tell me in the comments section on YouTube or X, wherever you're watching this. Press subscribe on any of the podcast platforms so you don't miss any of our coverage. If you just want to follow the Karen Reed case, we have the channel specifically for that. Maybe you're already there. The trial of Karen Reed. That's us. Or if you want to follow all of the cases that we have for you, then search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get your podcasts or your videos, and you'll find us on YouTube as well. Excited to hear your thoughts on how it went down today. It'll be another exciting one tomorrow, so we'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale is almost here. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair, plus amazing doorbuster deals and free shipping site-wide. Shop the sale at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.